Chapter 67. The Outer Hebrides. I prepared to leave London after a life-changing visit to the British Museum, where I was introduced to the enormous body of work produced by my maternal grandfather's famous family, the Wyons. For 150 years, the family's artists and engravers were associated with the English Mint and elsewhere. The day I visited, the British Museum's wine expert guided me through their collection of wine medals, coins, seals and dies. I was gobsmacked, but I did recover. Before I left, I found myself on the horns of a dilemma, because I was torn between wanting to remain in London to cherry-pick the oodles of cultural events on offer, or, whilst I had the money, visit the Outer Hebrides. I chose the latter because I was intrigued by this remote string of windswept islands, located off the west coast of Scotland. And afterwards, I'd return to the Findhorn Foundation. For many years, I'd been dyeing spun wool with plants, then using the yarn to knit, crochet or weave one-of-a-kind garments. More recently, I'd shared my dyeing skills whilst lecturing in Toowoomba. With a solid understanding of the processes, albeit using Australian plants, I was interested to see how natural dyes were used to colour the wool that was spun and then woven into the highly sought-after Harris tweed. I took the overnight bus to Oban, a small town on the west coast of Scotland. Next morning, Saturday, I set up camp at the B&B, that had become my home away from home, since I began exploring the west coast. Next, I booked accommodation on Barra, the southernmost island of the Outer Hebridean chain. From Barra, I planned to work my way north. With travel arrangements in place and time on my hands, I amused myself by creating a series of over-the-top flower arrangements, inspired by Victorian paintings of tangled displays of fresh flowers and sometimes fruit. The wherewithal came from my host's allotment, which was chockers with masses of summer blooms as well as blackberries. Climbing the path to the allotment, I passed an austere grey stone building that was the Free High Church of Scotland. On my return, with armfuls of flowers and blackberry canes, I took note of the Sunday service times. Next morning, curiosity compelled me to make the fateful decision to attend the service, which was an experience I'd never forget. The congregation gathered, seated on rows of uncomfortable wooden pews facing the pulpit. The service was simple enough, but the sermon was something else. From the pulpit, the minister's booming voice crashed over us in waves, and I noticed others like myself, hunkering down in an attempt to avoid the full force of his fire and brimstone delivery. This wasn't at all what I expected. After the service, I wanted to escape quickly, but was delayed at the front door by the minister, who asked, "Will you be returning to worship?" I managed to collect my scattered wits sufficiently to stammer, "I am a tourist." I reluctantly shook his hand, before scurrying back to the B&B for a strong cup of tea. Next day, the Outer Hebridean adventure began. I took the ferry from Oban to Castle Bay, at the southern end of Barra. It was a stormy crossing. But once I'd regained my land legs, I made a beeline for the pub, where I began asking around for islanders producing hand-woven fabric using plant-dyed wool. My inquiries proved fruitless. It seemed most of the textile activity was further north. I was given the name of one Marion Campbell, a respected weaver of the famous Harris Tweed, who lived in a croft outside of Tarbet, at the top end of Harris. To get there, I needed to cross the islands of South Uist, Benbecula, and North Uist. To do this, I took a number of ferries and buses. The buses were smallish, picking up and dropping off passengers and packages along the way. As we rumbled northwards, I heard the Gaelic language spoken for the first time. I was thrilled to hear it, because before leaving home, I tried to learn a little in preparation for my forthcoming Scottish adventure. As I already spoke a couple of other languages in addition to English, I thought it'd be worth a go, but the dream was short-lived and I had to admit defeat. As a result, I was decidedly envious to hear my fellow passengers chattering away, switching effortlessly from Gaelic to English and back again, as we bounced along. I was relieved to finally arrive in Tarbet, and make my way to Marion's house. She was expecting me, and, following a tour of her workshop, I watched as she removed an 8-meter length of newly woven cloth from her loom, after which she invited me to join her the next day, to walk the tweed. Walking is a centuries-old method of cleaning, shrinking, and softening woolen cloth. It's traditionally done by women using their hands to thump wet soapy cloth against a walking board, whilst singing walking songs. Marian's pine walking board was deeply rutted along the grain lines from years and years of use. We sat on opposite sides of the board and began thumping the cloth against it over and over, before sliding the cloth sideways to work the next section. Whilst we worked, I peppered her with questions about the natural dyestuffs she used to color her sheep's fleece. Chatting was a welcome distraction, as it took my mind off the pain I was experiencing in my hands from the repeated thumps down onto the walking board. When we finished, the cloth was rinsed in cold water, wrung out and draped across a rock outcrop to dry in the sun. Next, Marian showed me the two varieties of lichen she collected from the rocks on her land. The color coming from the lichens was dependent upon the mordant used, giving shades of deep red, purple brown, or rusty orange. She then went on to list the other plants that she didn't bother with, because extracting the color was very time-consuming. Instead, she used acid dyes for strong greens and blues. My two-day textile intensive with Marian covered all the processes she used to produce Harris tweed. Before Scotland, I'd toyed with the idea of documenting the natural dyes used by the Scots to color wool for hundreds of years. But there was no need, because Marian drew my attention to a recent research project that had already recorded the plants and the processes used to extract color from each. I was somewhat relieved as I could now release the idea and move on to other things. My textile quest complete, I decided to skip Lewis, the last island in the Outer Hebrides chain, and took the ferry to the Isle of Skye. Thankfully, it was a calm crossing and the day was warm and still, just perfect for a final tourist fling. To explore the island, I rented a car with a couple of girls I'd met on the ferry. We beetled around, overawed by the rugged grass-covered hills and stunning ocean views. We made a point of visiting Armadale Castle, stronghold of Clan MacDonald, and then on to a craft shop that stocked quality Scottish-made items, with the emphasis on Scottishness. I farewelled my travelling companions at Broadford, and then took a bus across the Skye Bridge and onto Clunie, via Inverness. I'd been travelling the remote Outer Hebrides for a week, though it seemed much longer. It was as if time had stood still. As a result, my wanderlust had been tempered for the time being and I was now ready to embark on my next adventure. To complete an additional 4-week block at Clunie as a living in community guest, followed by the 8-week orientation program. In my mind, orientation was simply a formality because for me, foundation membership was a foregone conclusion. On reflection. Harris Tweed Weavers. From a distance I'd assumed that I'd find a scattering of weavers using traditional dyeing and weaving techniques on the Outer Hebrides. But I was mistaken. Marian Campbell was the last person practicing the old ways of colouring wool, and then spinning it into yarn for both warp and weft. The highly desirable yardage she wove could carry the prestigious Harris Tweed label. Only cloth woven on the islands of the Outer Hebrides using Scottish-grown wool were permitted to carry the label. When I realised Marian Campbell was the last weaver dyeing the wool she used to make Harris tweed, I became concerned. But my concern was unfounded because an authority on natural dyes had already done the job. The book, The Colour Cauldron: The History and Use of Dyes in Scotland, was published in 1986 and, decades on, remains the most comprehensive publication on the subject. Scotland. From the outset, I felt quite at home, and I wonder if the feeling of belonging was possibly due to Scottish ancestry on my mother's side, the Melville and Leslie clans. As I wandered the country, I became more aware of the diverse lifestyles of the Scots, whether they lived on remote islands or in regional town centres, and I found it all fascinating. In my wanderings, I also noticed it was getting colder. It was now late September, and the multicolored autumn leaves swirling around my feet signaled the advent of winter. I did wonder how I'd cope with the cold, the snow, the ice, and the darkness. As it turned out, I'd reason for concern. Facts. Marion Campbell. When interviewed by a Washington Post journalist in 1990, Marion told him, "I am the last person doing it the really old way, dyeing my own fleeces, carding, making my own yarn, weaving, I even do my own walking to clean the tweed and shrink it a bit. That takes a lot of stomping about in Wellington boots." Marion used her feet to walk the tweed, replacing the group of women helpers needed to do the job, in days gone by. Mordants. Helper dye stuff to bond with protein fibers like wool, silk, alpaca, cashmere, and camel. The term comes from the Latin mordere, to bite. The most commonly used mordants are alum, chrome, copper, and tin. All mordants, other than alum, are toxic and must be handled with great care. Harris tweed, a brief history. Originally, this fabric was hand-woven by crofters for clothing to protect them from the bitter cold, caused by fierce Atlantic winds blowing across the Outer Hebrides. Surplus cloth was bartered, eventually becoming a form of currency amongst the islanders, and it was not unusual for rents to be paid in woven blankets or lengths of cloth. By the end of the 18th century in remote parts of Scotland, spinning yarn from the fleece of local sheep and weaving it into cloth was a very important cottage industry. In the late 1980s, the market crashed, but those weavers who stuck with producing Harris tweed were rewarded when, in the late 1990s, the fashion world's interest was rekindled, and Harris tweed became the in thing. In 2005, Nike used the fabric for their range of footwear, once again giving the industry a major boost.